All right, I want to take a quick break here, and I want to talk about something that's very near and dear to my heart, and most likely, if you're listening to this, to yours too. Because have you ever thought about starting your own podcast? I know when I was trying to get the Around the Crease podcast off the ground, I had so many questions. I didn't know how to record an episode, how to get all my shows into the apps people like to listen to, like whatever podcast app you were using right now. How do you make money off the podcast? There was just so many things that I was not even sure to where to start. But turns out the answer to every one of those questions was so simple. Anchor. Anchor is a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing your podcast. And best of all, it's 100% free and ridiculously easy to use. And now Anchor can match you with great sponsors who want to advertise on your podcast. That means you can get paid to podcast right away. In fact, that's what I'm doing right now by reading this ad. You know, before I was using Anchor, I was using another service, and I tried Anchor after hearing about it on a podcast, and once I tried it, I have never gone back. It has been an amazing experience, fantastic support. I love them, absolutely. So if you've ever wanted to start your own podcast and make money doing it, go to anchor.fm/start. That's anchor.fm/start to join me and the diverse community of podcasters already using Anchor. And again, that's anchor.fm/start. And I can't wait to hear your podcast.
Hey, everybody. Mike here. Welcome to the LaxRecords.com podcast, episode 23. Kind of like last week, we're just going to get right into the show this week. This week, I have two guests. I have head coach Scott Ricard from Immokalee. I finally learned how to pronounce it, guesting on the show today. And then I'm also have an interview with NIAC senior goalie Will Ramos, who just became the 12th known goalie to hit 1,000 career saves. But before we get into those interviews, I kind of want to cover a few different things, things that basically just kind of drew my attention for the week. It was a busy week. If you've been keeping up with what's going on the site this week, you have noticed there was a lot of updates to the 2017 Stylax stat leaders. We had coaches earning milestone victories. We had players, you know, getting program records. I mean, we had a new state record set. I mean, it was a crazy week. It's been an exciting week. So kind of getting into it, I'm going to kick it off with, once again, as I like to do, talk about the national rankings. I'm recording this on Thursday night, so I actually just finished compiling the rankings for this week. And a couple things kind of stood out to me. One was the Haverford school out of Haverford, Pennsylvania, on a six-game winning streak, and they jumped up six spots this week. They were in 13 in the consensus rankings last week. They jumped up to 7. They leapfrogged a number of teams, which I always find is interesting whenever teams leapfrog other teams. But, you know, it's kind of hard to argue with Haverford's record as of late. You know, they started the season off 0-2. They lost it to MIAA conference schools, but they've come back with a vengeance. They beat Culver Academy. They beat Boys Latin. They beat Malvern Prep. And that's just kind of the highlights, again, after starting 0-2. And I can't talk about Haverford School without talking about last week's player of the week, TJ Malone. He helped them to the wins over Boys Latin and Malvern Prep. And, I mean, he's a junior. He had 17 points in 3 games. He also had a number of points in the Strathaven game, which was part of the Checking for Cancer tournament that happened not yesterday, but the previous Saturday. So he had 17 points in 3 games. I mean, he had 3 goals and 1 assist in the Boys Latin game. Haverford was actually down 5-3 at halftime at that game and went on to win 12-11. He followed that up with 5 goals and 1 assist against Malvern Prep, which is a huge conference game because those two teams meet twice during the season. And generally, one of those teams win the Inter-AC championship, and those games pretty much decide who's going to end up winning the conference title each year. So it's going to be kind of interesting to see once those two teams play again, if you know maybe the tide has turned, because I think Malvern Prep, they had lost to LaSalle College High School before they had lost to Haverford, so they lost a couple games. So it'll be kind of interesting to see if these two teams are on different trajectories when they meet later in the season in just a few weeks. So that was kind of my big note for the rankings. I have a couple other notes in last week's. Dale Barton kind of not really moving a whole lot despite starting 4-0. But as I was getting ready to record this, they had just lost this evening. So I'm sure my kind of interest is going to see how much they're penalized after not really having moved up that much. Because usually when a team starts in the top 25 and then after 4 or 5 weeks when they really haven't moved despite winning, that just kind of shows me that, you know, a lot of the rankers don't really have a whole lot of confidence in the team at that point. So they're hesitant to keep moving them up, which is honestly kind of typical for New Jersey squads. I know usually fans of Jersey kind of hate it because generally the New Jersey schools start way further down in the rankings. And a lot of that has to do, same thing with New York. New York schools usually start a little bit further in the rankings for the most part. St. Anthony's and Chaminade are usually the two outliers in that. But, you know, there's a little bit of a point to that because the way you look at it is, you know, Florida teams start so early that, you know, you usually keep them generally out of the rankings until the last few weeks of the year, because by that time you go, you get teams out of New York and the New Jerseys and the Northeast schools, they're going to lose out, and then you're going to want to move the, you know, maybe a St. Thomas Aquinas or a Ponte Vedra or whoever wins the FHSAA championship. You'll probably want to move them into the top 25. So usually Florida schools don't appear in the rankings early unless they just have a completely demanding schedule early, and then, you know, if they win, they earn it. If they lose, they fall out. But then they usually end up making it back in somewhere. So I wouldn't be surprised to see, like, a Florida school. But back to New Jersey. So, you know, I wasn't too surprised to see them not move up too much because, again, you kind of figure that those schools ahead of them will eventually end up losing, and then they just kind of move up the progression bar because since New Jersey is one of the later states to finish their season, so they generally end up finishing maybe like a top 10 or something like that just by virtue of, you know, teams ahead of them continuing to lose as long as the team continues to win. So, you know, I wasn't shocked, but it was kind of just surprising to see that they had been leapfrog a few times and now they lost. So I'll be interested to see what happens to them next week. So moving on from rankings, you know, I want to kind of note a couple of notable performers from last week outside of Will, who I, again, will be interviewing a little bit later on. Kevin Lindley out of Darien. Now, this is a game I actually got to watch because the Darien Athletic Foundation, which I'd like to give a huge shout out to, they streamed the game against Niskayuna on Saturday. Again, not yet, I think it was, I forget the date, like April 9th or something, April 8th, actually. And, you know, the Darien won 17-9, and Kevin Lindley had 9 goals and 1 assist. They said it tied the program record for most goals in a single game against Case Mathias had the record, so obviously a lot of Duke fans will know that name, a lot of ACC fans or just college fans in general. So Kevin had tied that record with that 9 goals and 1 assist, and it was quite a performance. Like, that was like Darien pulled away late in that game, so that was a pretty impressive performance. And if you go to the website and find the story, which I'll actually put a link to in the show notes, you actually can see the replay of the game. They have it on their YouTube channel. So you can actually watch that game as well on demand. And I think another notable performance this week came out of South Carolina. Christchurch Episcopal's Chase Poplin became South Carolina's all-time leading goal scorer with a 4-goal performance and a 19-2 win over Eastside. And that was on Monday, April 10th. Poplin had passed current Duke attackman and former Fort Mill star Mitch Russell. Poplin now has 203 career goals. Russell had 200 goals in his high school career. Russell is still in no danger of losing the overall points lead. He has don't have it right in front of me, but I know he has at least 400 points. He might be exactly 400 points. I think he had 200 and 200 for his career. So I'll put a link to the South Carolina state records and just kind of a quick update because I know, especially with Florida having finished their season and some teams already done, I have started to get the question as far as like when the state records will be updated. And generally I update state records, don't get updated until at minimum till the state championship game has been played. It's just a little bit too much for me to try and do the state updates because it's I kind of worked on the back end over the summer, so it's a little bit easier than it has been in previous years. but there's still quite a few updates. And generally, it takes me a while to get all the stats from all the different areas to kind of make sure I'm getting corrected information and everything's kind of up to date and cleaned up before I update. So I usually take some time before the end of the season. So if you're a Florida high school lacrosse fan wondering when those state pages are going to get updated, or if you're a South Carolina fan wanting to know when Chase's name is going to move up that list, it's going to be a few more weeks just because for my own sanity and to make sure I give attention to all the states as the season is being progressed. But I will send out updates when states start to get updated throughout the year as well. I always go in alphabetical order, so it's pretty easy to figure out what states will be updated and when. So those were two of the notable ones that I will not be interviewing. I want to kind of keep it short because I have two longer interviews this week, and I want to make sure I get to them. So first off, we're going to talk to Will Ramos, who he made six saves in a 17-3 win over Edgemont on Saturday, April 8th. Saturday, April 8th was a very busy day. And that actually put him at exactly 1,000 career saves. And that is notable because there's only 12 known players that I'm aware of. There may be more out there. I always caveat that. It's like these are the best known, like that I've been able to track down and been able to find out. But as of today, there are 12 known players, and Will became the 12th to reach that 1,000 career save mark. And just kind of as a side note, I think the 400-point club, which I have all the players and player bios for on the website, like I think there's 68 of them. So that just kind of gives you an idea. And, I mean, there's a lot of different factors that go into being able to make 1,000 career saves. So, you know, we're actually going to talk to Will a little bit about that because he in New York is one of the states that allow you to play since you're, if you're an eighth grader. So it's kind of interesting to note as well. So Will, I'll put a link to my interview, the written interview I did with him as part of the high school notebook that I do every Tuesday. But if you don't want to read and you'd rather take this with you, I'm going to have the full interview, and we're actually going to get to that right now.
What did 1,000 mean to you?
I mean, it means a lot. You know, I've been a part of this NIAC program ever since I was 13. I mean, I started playing in eighth grade. Well, when I first started playing, I never thought it'd be a realistic achievement. I kind of just kept playing my game, and then maybe when I was a junior, about midway through my junior year, it kind of dawned on me that I was approaching 1,000. And after I broke the NIAC high school record, I realized that maybe I should go even further and try and get the section. So it's really exciting time. You know, I'm really happy about it. The whole team's happy about it.
Yeah, it was quite a day because I saw one of your teammates hit. I guess you had two teammates that had over 10 points in the game, and then one of them got his 100th career goal. So it was.
Yes, his name is Brendan O'Sullivan. Brendan, we actually call him Vito. Vito, my whole life, has pretty much been my best friend. You know, we played youth lacrosse together growing up. And we always had their sticks in our hands. And he always shot on me. So it's kind of where our game evolved from. We're just playing around in the backyard. So it was a pretty exciting time because he got his 100th goal, and I got my 1,000th save, and it happened to be in the same game.
Yeah, I saw the pictures on there. They were pretty great, you know, with the 100 and 1,000 marked on the ball. So that was pretty fantastic.
Yeah, that was really cool.
You know, I know it's one of New York's kind of unique because you can play on the varsity high school team as an eighth grader. And you not only played, but you started. So what was that like, you know, coming up as an eighth grader and playing on a high school lacrosse team in New York?
It was very different. I mean, it was very obvious that the maturity level between me and some of the seniors were very different. But what made it very easy for me because my brother was on the team, and my brother happened to be a senior captain. Uh-huh. And so I knew my brother very well, obviously, and I knew a lot of his friends who were on the team because they've been at my house when I was younger, and I knew them while I was growing up. So it wasn't like I was just introduced to a team of strangers. It was a bunch of kids that I was growing up with, and I was very comfortable with, so it made it a lot easier on my end. to play with them.
Yeah. Was there, like, was it nerve-wracking or anything like that? You know, being, obviously, you know, I'm just trying to think back to what I was like in eighth grade, and I couldn't imagine have been on the high school team. Because, I mean, I guess you weren't, I don't know what NIAC, like, the where is eighth grade part of the high school physical building, or is it separate? So
the high school and the middle school are at two separate locations. So after every single day of middle school, I'd have to travel over to the high school. But it's not too far because NIAC's a small town. It's only a couple minutes
right.
to drive. But the only – I did run into a conflict, though, because the high school ends around 2 o'clock and the middle school ends around 3. So oftentimes we would have practice at 3 o'clock, so I would be coming to practice a little late and stuff like that. But aside from that, I wouldn't necessarily say I was nervous. I felt that we had a really, really good defense that year. So they gave me a lot of confidence, and they actually helped me get the shots that I wanted to see. You know, like, it was a very, I want to say very controlled team.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't say I was nervous. I was very confident.
Yeah.
You know,
what do you think gave you that confidence as an eighth grader?
I would say, well, my whole life I was playing with older kids. So I wanted to say I was kind of used to that level of competition, because in seventh grade I also played on the junior varsity team. So I was already playing like those workouts with the older guys. And even when I was playing youth lacrosse, you know, I was in third grade and me and Brendan were playing on the fifth and sixth grade team. And then when I was in fifth grade, we played out with the seventh and eighth grade team. So I was always used to that higher level of competition and kind of being the youngest one on the field.
Mm-hmm.
So I learned to adapt with it and kind of just play my game.
Okay. So what do you think what has been your biggest, I guess, adjustment since that, you know, over that time? Because I'm sure you've learned quite a few things since that eighth grade year, now being a senior. So what do you think the biggest thing you've learned since then has been?
I would say the biggest thing I learned was just how to be a leader on the field. You know, you really can't beat experience, and just having seen what the game has come from over the last 5 years, it really gives you an insight that, you know, people who have only been on the team for 1 year just aren't aware of. So it kind of allows me to kind of guide my teammates in the right direction and kind of make sure they're doing the right things and kind of give them what you can get away with, what you can't get away with, and things like that, and kind of how to prepare for the task and games ahead.
Okay. And it's kind of wrapping up. I want to talk about the offense a little bit, man. I think you got, I don't have it in front of me, but I think you got like 3 or 4 goals and a couple assists this season.
Yes.
How does that happen?
right now I have 3 goals and 3 assists. I'm actually a part of the man up unit. So if there's a 60-second penalty, then I'll run out of the net. I have my short stick, elbow pads, and a different pair of gloves that I leave in the box. So I just, once I see the flag, I run over to the box, I change real quick, and then I go on the man-up unit. But the reason I can play offense is because I never actually stopped playing midfield until eighth grade.
Okay.
So for my youth lacrosse team, I would split time. I would play the first half in goal, and then I would play the second half in the field. So I've just always had a short stick in my hand. It's kind of just always been my thing. So it's cool. It's definitely really cool.
I was gonna say, how much fun is it to, you know, kind of change up in the middle of the game?
I love it. There's nothing better. I honestly love it.
Yeah. How do the teammates react whenever you've scored this season?
It gets pretty loud. You know, people get really excited because no one expects it. It's like you see a team, if they don't have the scouting report against us, they just see the goalie run out of the net and then put on a short stick. They're kind of just like, what the heck's going on? Like,
yeah, I can imagine. It usually makes big news whenever you see the goal. Usually, from what I've seen goalies score, it's usually because they chuck it from the other end and, you know, the other goalie may be out of the goal or something like that. So that's usually when I've seen goalies.
Yeah.
Kind of interesting to see that you got, you know, you keep your gear on the sideline just waiting for that moment.
All my points have come from a short stick
That's awesome.
this year. Yeah, it's definitely really fun.
Well, man, thank you again. I really appreciate it. I mean, like I said, I was in touch with the whoever runs your guys' Twitter account, who is fantastic, by the way. So please pass on my congratulations to them as well, because they do a great job. But I know you were kind of getting close to 1,000, so I was kind of making sure I kept on tabs with it. And it just happened to be a kind of a great day, considering two 10-point performers on the team and Brendan's 100th goal. So quite a day, and I hope you
Yeah.
celebrated and enjoyed the win and the achievement for of all you guys.
Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate this a lot.
Hey everybody, welcome back. All right, now we're not going to spend too much more time. I got an interview with Immokalee head coach Scott Ricard. This was an interesting one for me because Coach Ricard's been really fantastic over the last couple years about letting me know about a couple of his players, three of his players to be exact, that have been pretty consistent on earning spots on the Stylax stat leaders over the last two, at least the last two seasons. And I think I have them for the last three, but I know for sure at least the last 2 years, especially Mark Galindo, has been pretty much a staple. Just to kind of give you a little bit of context, Immokalee is Edgerrin James's. For those Indianapolis Colts fan, Edgerrin James, a running back, about came into the league around the same time as Peyton Manning, and he was by far one of the better backs in leagues. Like, he was actually one of my favorite running backs back in the day. So it's his alma mater, and the school itself is a football power. Coach Ricard talks a little bit about the makeup of the school as far as like what kind of the student body is like, and we talk a lot about how he's helped turn the lacrosse program into a winning program and some of the players that have helped him. Just to give you a little bit of context, Immokalee was 1-10 in 2011. The program was started in 2010. I think they won two games their first year, and then went 1-10 in 2011. And then they had a couple coaching changes the next few years. Coach Ricard was an assistant on those teams, but in 2014 he took over as head coach. That year, Lax Power has them at 2-12. So that was in 2014. They w had a winning record last season, and then this year they went 13-7. So, and he admits, and you'll hear him talk about like how he was not a lacrosse guy when he started, didn't know a whole lot. So he's learning, as some of the players are learning. So what he's been able to do with the program has been phenomenal. They're kind of a lower income area, so it's been really important for him to kind of get some of the guys out and get them to travel, kind of get them out of Immokalee and show them new parts of the state. And they had a spring break trip that they actually documented on Instagram account. So I'll have a link to that as well, because it was fun. So it's just a really great story out of Florida, and I really was excited to get him on the podcast so he can share it. And I kind of want to, before we kind of get into the interview, talk about three of the players that he mentions that are going to end up on Florida's all-time leaders list when I do the updates in a few weeks. So I already mentioned Mark Galindo, Brian Reyes, and goalie Raymond Perez. All three, like I said, will finish with spots on the all-time leaders list. And from the information that I've collected so far, Perez looks like he's going to finish second all-time in the state for known saves with 671. I have one goalie that I'm still working to confirm that I think just finished with just barely over 700. So he will obviously end up as number one, as long as I'm able to verify it with one more source, and then we'll do that. Galindo finished with 277 career points, which is the program's all-time leader. Reyes finished second on the program all-time with 226 career points. So I also have links to their Max Preps pages, which the Coach Ricard updates. So without further ado, I'm going to let him talk about the program much more eloquently than I've been able to. But I also want to thank him for letting me know how to pronounce the school's name. So on to the interview.
Tell me a little bit about the school in general, because I think you guys over the summer were kind of trying to get raise some funds. So you guys spring break trip and stuff like that, and I saw you guys got that. So just tell me a little bit about the program, how old is it, and things like that.
Well, the community, it's a farming community. It's the school itself is 95% free and reduced lunch, so we have a lot of low income socio, a lot of low income families that, are borderline on the poverty line. the school itself, it's a C school academically, so it raised itself from a D to a C. And the program was started Collier County, which is the county that we're in. It's one of the I don't know how familiar you are with Florida, but it's Fort Myers is one of the big cities, one of the big cities that everybody seems to know. We're the county south of that. They picked up La Crosse as a county in 2009. So they bought the equipment for all the public schools, so that all the schools could have it. At that time, a couple of the schools had it as clubs for a few years: Barron Collier, Gulf Coast, Naples, which are generally the more affluent schools in our county. So the county bought all the stuff in 2009, and it's kind of taken off from there. In 2009, the lower schools, ourself, Lely, have kind of really struggled with it. They haven't really fielded really competitive teams. So 2009, I think they had 3 wins, but they beat Lely and they beat Palmetto Ridge. And 2010 is when we had a new coach come in who was actually the offensive coordinator for the football team. And at the end of the season, he asked me, "Richard, do you want to coach lacrosse?" I said, "I don't know anything about it, because when I was in high school, I graduated from Naples High in Collier County. Played football and I ran track. At that time, we didn't have lacrosse. Wasn't a sport. I'd seen it on TV, at the college level, and thought, that's a pretty cool sport. I wouldn't mind playing it." But I didn't have the gumption to go start a club or anything. So when he asked me, "Yeah, sure, let's do this." And we started it up, and the first game we played Lely, and we beat them. Beat him handedly. It was a running clock. We kind of look at each other. I was like, "Man, all right, this lacrosse thing, we got to figure it out." And didn't win another game the rest of the year. Running clocks the rest of the year. So it was kind of a rude awakening at that point. The next year, he stepped down. He's a football coach. He's the offensive coordinator. We're a football town. He wanted to focus on football. Then another coach came in. My wife and I were having a baby, expecting a baby, so I stepped down as an assistant. They didn't win a game that whole year. No, they won one game. I'm sorry. I think they won one game. I forget. And then I came in the next year and we won. I came back as an assistant, and we won one game. And then the coach that was there, he had a family issue. His mother was sick, so he had to step down. My wife and I talked about it. Said, "Hey, let's do this lacrosse thing. I think we can turn the corner." And then in 2000, what's it, or 17, 16, 15, 14, so 2013, I think I took it over 4 years ago. And
First year as head.
as the head coach.
And yeah, I was kind of looking through your guys, the schedule on Lax Pound. It looks like 2014 you guys had won 2 games, but since then you've been steadily improving. And so what, like, I guess why? What has been the difference?
Well, I took a little bit from, I was lucky enough to be an assistant football coach for, 5 or 6 years, and I saw what worked in practice. Taking the kids and having an individual period, and then a group period, and then a team period where you'd run in football 7-on-7. You'd have your 7-on-7s, 11-on-11s, and I kind of applied that to lacrosse when I was an assistant coach. The practice was kind of was all right, we'll work on this, and then we'll roll the ball out, and then we'll just let them practice, just let them scrimmage. But there was no really working on fundamentals, and it didn't really dawn on me until I became, until I was named the head coach, that we're not really working on fundamentals at all during our practice. We're just kind of doing stuff just to do stuff. And then so that's what I kind of started with. I was like, all right, every practice we're going to have an indie period for 20 minutes. We're going to work on something. We're going to work on shooting. We're going to work on passing. We're going to work on ground balls. We're going to work on something every day. And then we'll get together and we'll get all the defenders, the defenders and the goalie, they can work on clears. They can work on, setting up the defense, how the rotation is going to work. We can pull one of the other goalies and with the offense, and we can take shots. We can work on our, the plays we want to work on our formations and take shots on the goalie. So now the goalie's getting more shots, we're getting shots, and then we'll come together as a team, work on 5-on-5, work on man up situations, work on man down situations, and do more situational stuff. And it, it's paid off. I think the kids understand a little bit more now how to play lacrosse rather than just, all right, we're going to work on this one thing, and then tomorrow we're going to work on this thing that's totally different, has nothing to do with what we were working on before.
Okay. And speaking of the players, you've had two really good the last few years, Mark Galindo and Brian. Just talk a little bit about them, because I know, I'm looking at the series of tweets yesterday. They set school records and tied. So and obviously Mark has been one of the he's gotten a lot of mentions in the stat leaders over the last couple of years, because I mean he just seems like almost every game he's putting up 7 goals or 10 points or something like that. So just kind of talk about how they developed and how they got, so good, so fast.
I've got a great coaching staff. I mean, that's I. It's not just me. It's
Right.
definitely the coaches that I have really bought in, and the kids have bought in. Mark and Brian especially. Their freshman year, when I started it, obviously those were my first class. When we first started it, Mark came out the first day, and he's just throwing and catching. And I look at one of my coaches and I was like, has this kid played before? Because that's the other thing. We never had kids that, had ever played lacrosse before. They get to the high school level and it's freshman January when you start, when you can start the preseason or, whenever it is, February. This is the first time a lot of them ever touch a stick. So you're teaching them skills as they're learning how to play the game. And Sunshine, or Mark, we call him Sunshine, he comes out and I mean, he's throwing and catching a ball and just doing like he's not, like it's no big deal. And I asked one of the coaches, like, has he ever played before? And no, he's never played before. So that was one of the things that, when I saw that, I was like, man, this kid might be something. And he's worked at his craft. Well, after that first year, after his freshman year, all those guys were there all summer, just throwing and catching and shooting and just texting each other, hey, let's go to the field, let's go to the field, let's do this, what are you doing? Same with Brian. Brian, his work has paid off. I think he scored in like 31 straight games. I mean, he was a player that he was going to score. It was just a matter of when.
Yeah.
He was going to score at least a goal. And I think in all his high school games from his sophomore year on, I think there's only one game, one or two games he didn't score. So that's what, 30, 60 games that he didn't score. He didn't score one goal. But those guys just, they bought in. They were the one of those guys that, how it is when your best players are your hardest workers, it makes kind of everything easier.
Yeah.
And those guys definitely put in the work and, and they reap the benefits as, as seniors.
Yeah. And how important is that for the program that you guys are obviously still building? You're only, at 6, 7 years old. So to have guys like that kind of, lead the way and show, like, how important is that for the program?
It's huge. We've been around for 6 or 7 years, but I tell people that's really we've only been around 4 years because that's when we kind of took it serious. Started taking it serious was 4 years ago when these kids kind of bought in and like, hey, we can win these games. We played our first year or that my first year we played a team, Admiral Farragut, which is up in Tampa. So it's about a 2.5 hour ride, 3 hour ride from Immokalee. And we went up there and we beat them 6-3, and that was the first, the first victory that they had against a team that was, they weren't a great team the year before, but they were kind of where we were. They were in our wheelhouse, so a team that we could compete with, kind of on the same skill level, and we beat them. And everybody was like, hey, we can beat some of these teams. And we went back this year and played them, kind of brought everything full circle the last game of the year, and I think we beat them 17-4. So, that was kind of cool to be able to go back to where it all started.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
But as far as those guys building it, I mean, now one of my assistant coaches mentioned, after the loss Thursday, that this team was kind of like our 2000 football team that lost to Sean Taylor. Those are the guys that kind of set the tone for football. Now, obviously, football has gone on and won a state championship and played. We played for another one, and they've a lot of regional final appearances. So, that loss to Sean Taylor was in the regional semifinal. So, he kind of put it to the kids now. Hey, you guys have set the bar. Now it's time for those kids that are going to be net seniors next year, those juniors, those freshmen, those sophomores. It's time for you to take the bar and run with it.
And I'm sure I'd have to guess that you've learned quite a bit about lacrosse over the past 6 or 7 years.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It's the lacrosse, as lacrosse is a kind of a gentleman's game. If coaches are always willing to help other coaches, officials are always willing to help you out. And that was one thing that I really kind of surprised me with it at first. That we were the little engine that could, that couldn't a couple of years ago. And teams would, they'd get up on us by 20, and then they'd stop shooting, which was, really cool. In football, you don't do that in football. You keep running the ball, you keep trying to score, and if you're missing a guy on the wing on a faceoff, hey coach, you need a guy on the wing. Or if you're missing a guy on attack, hey coach, you need an attack guy down there. And so that's really, really interesting, and that's just has gotten me to enjoy lacrosse a lot more and really like the sport and want to do well with it. That, and I hate losing. So, my wife's been super supportive. She's always looking at stuff for me. She's buying me instructional stuff when we first started out. Just finding little things, talking to coaches. Hey, what works for you? How do you guys do this? What do you got, in a man up, what do you guys do? Officials have helped us out. So it's, by explaining the rules a little bit more to me when we first started. So it's definitely been a huge learning curve, and not have playing the game growing up. I was kind of behind the eight ball as well.
That's great. It's one thing I noticed, like coaches always seem willing to, help each other out, because I think everybody wants to see the game grow, and because we all love
Exactly.
it.
Exactly.
You're
And if you can get it in a area like ours. I mean, we're an inner city school without the inner city problem. I mean, without the inner city violence. We don't have a whole lot of violence out there, so that's one good thing. But we have a ton of broken homes, and just the poverty.
Right.
So.
So, just having the program, I guess just having something for, the kids to rally around. Is that, I don't know, I guess something that.
Yeah, because not everybody's a football player
Right.
out there. It gives them another sport to kind of to grasp onto. And some of the, we do have some football players. One of my best players next year is going to be, he was a football player, and he's going back and playing football this year. He injured his knee last year, so he couldn't play football as this past season. But he's going to go back, and he'll probably be a starting linebacker for on the football team.
Okay. That what I mean, what position play for you?
He's a middie.
Maybe. Okay. He's probably,
Yeah.
if he's playing linebacker, I have to imagine he's probably pretty intimidating.
Yeah, he's one of my biggest kids. He's probably, I mean, he looks like a football player when he gets off the bus or out of the car. He looks like a football player, acts like a football player. So, football players a little bit different than lacrosse players, I've learned.
Number of linebackers over my days, and I always kind of equate them to lacrosse goalies. I'm like, there's something a little wrong with them, like just because
Yeah.
throw yourself into the battle like that, like wrong is probably the wrong term, but it's like your mind's wired a little bit differently.
Yeah, you're a little bit different if you're a linebacker, that's for sure.
So all right, so this is your 4th year as head coach, and obviously your first kind of senior class is graduating. Just kind of to wrap up, what does that kind of mean to you? Or this is, heading that, especially with Mark and Brian kind of helping the program so much over the last couple of years. Like, what does it mean to you to have your first graduating class as a lacrosse coach?
Bittersweet. I wish, I sent out the end of the year, we have to do our requests for next year. What equipment do we need? This and that. So I sent it out to the coaches and said, what do you guys need for next year? What to help us got a couple emails back. A fifth year for Mark and Brian would be great. Those guys are, you're not gonna replace those guys. I just hope you can find somebody that can be their own person. Hopefully next year Moises can be his own player and kind of take that what they've started and kind of just continue with it. It's bittersweet. We're gonna miss those guys, definitely. We lose Ray, who's been a 4-year goalie, set the Florida record for saves. So the whole class, we're graduating a lot of experience and a lot of points and a lot of saves, but that's what good programs do. And hopefully we're good enough now where we don't have to go all the way back to the beginning and to where we were 4 years ago. We're not going to be there. Now we're starting, a little bit higher up. We just got to find the next guys and keep working over the summer. Keep watching video and keep talking up the sport and see if we can't get some more of our athletes to come out and play. Because that's the key. If we can get some of our athletes, and we have phenomenal athletes at Immokalee High School, we're just getting them to play lacrosse, pick up the sport, and not be intimidated by trying to catch a ball with a stick.
Yeah, I guess that's the tough, especially, I covered football for years and years, and I know, football has kind of become a year-round sport at this point. Once kind of start training for the combines and all the spring and summer stuff that goes on with that, 7-on-7 tournaments and Maryland, I'm sure Florida, it might even be a little more.
Oh man, Florida's crazy. Well, and lacrosse is almost kind of becoming that too with the summer travel programs. There was we were able to start a summer travel program, travel team in Immokalee, the Immokalee Venom. So that's another opportunity for the kids to kind of keep a stick in their hand over the summer. Those guys do a good job over there of just running it and keeping the kids engaged. I think they're trying to get into the elementary schools and the middle schools this summer. So hopefully they can build a U13, U11 team, and that's really going to help.
I guess having that feeder type program where coming in, and then like you said, you get the kids as they're freshmen that have played before, and so you're not trying to teach them two things at once. That can be tremendous help. That's how, I know talking to a lot of coaches, that was usually their first big step, is just getting the kind of the feeder programs built up to where, once they get to high school, they there's a basic understanding and the kids know a little bit about the sport, and then they can kind of that next level. Over there for
Exactly. That's kind of what we faced for, like I said, for 2 or 3, the first couple of years is you get the freshmen out that have never played. And then of course you get your seniors out that want to come out as a senior. And that and inevitably happens every year with us. And we've been lucky the last couple of years. We found a couple diamonds in the rough. We had a kid last year who was a lockdown defender. Couldn't cradle, couldn't catch the ball, couldn't do anything. When he get the ball, I'd have to call timeout. But he could lock down. I mean, he could play defense. He was a he played DB for me, and he was the kid was just a great athlete, and he would be able to lock down whoever. And then this year we had another kid came out as a basketball player, played LSM, and he's got a Division II school looking at him. He's got Union College, the NAIA school looking at him. So it's a great story for those kids to come out and put in some work, and then hopefully get a little bit of financial aid when they go to college. And that's the big thing, is just getting them out of Immokalee. Go get an education, and if you want to come back, that's fine, but get out and get an education.